This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive. All around the streets and the cities, where all beautiful places, the walls came tumbling down. People of the world all had it together for the boys.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Brian Levinka.
Summer.
Summer Iman.
And Glenn Holt. And on tonight's show, although referred to as the GLBT community, there is division among us. This is especially true between the transgendered and the rest of the community. First up tonight, we explore why that is true and what we can do about it with Kristen Williams and Daniel Williams. Then on News Wrap, six more activists have been arrested for chaining themselves to the White House gates to protest President Obama's failure to fulfill his election promises to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And the annual International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia will be observed 1 week from today on May 17th. At the top of the second hour, Paul Guillory from the Men's Gathering will be here to tell us about a roundtable discussion happening next Saturday, exploring opportunities and ways to encourage more members of the Black GLBT community. Kevin Scott Hall is a singer-songwriter who earned a creative writing degree at New York City College. Off the Charts is his first novel, and Joan Devlin will be joining us from Iowa to interview Kevin about his work. And we also have the feature segment from This Way Out, which tonight focuses on that weird scandal around Dr. George Reekers and reports that he hired a call boy from Rent.com, but just to carry his luggage.
Oh, yes. But before that, KPFT is in its fundraising cycle, which we do a couple times a year. And we wish it could be shorter, but the reality is that most of the funds we get are from our listeners. And we would really appreciate that if you could call, and if you're able to make that pledge, we'd like you to do that right now. We already got a really nice pledge from a Merrill, that did it over the internet, and so that's already credit to our show, but we still got a ways to go. And if you can make those pledges early, or we could just continue on doing the show. We really try to pack these shows with some interesting discussion, and we want to get to that, but we really need for you to pick up the call, pick up the phone, and call, or whichever way you want to do it. You can do it on the internet, kpfd.org, or you can call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. We have people standing out there in the lobby, ready to pick up the phone and listen to you make that pledge. It's very simple, doesn't take very long, and we can do it very quickly because we want to get back to programming.
And I want to thank all of you who have pledged in the past. And so if you've pledged in the past, this is the time to do it again. Just a few dollars a day, a month, whatever you can spare to support our program and all of the programming on KPFT. Where else can you hear the type of programming you hear on KPFT? And especially our program, where you hear all of the information interviews about the GLBT community. Call 713-526-5738.
We strive here at Queer Voices to make this the outlet for the community, a sounding board, if you will, for all of the events, issues, and things going on in the community. But we can't do that without support from you. So if you're listening, or if you've listened in the past and you're listening tonight and you've appreciated what we've done at Queer Voices, we would appreciate you calling in right now and pledging. This is how we stay on the air, 713-526-KPFT, or go to the website, kpft.org.
And remember that if some of you listen to us tomorrow or the next day, either on their iPod or at the archives, you can in fact go on and pledge at that time, but remember to tell them it's for Queer Voices.
Because we want to get credit, you know, because we put out a show, and that's kind of how we're kind of judged around here.
Yes, and not to be plugging all those Apple devices, as Ellen even says, IHOP. She thinks that's part of the Apple family.
The global empire
yes.
of Apple.
But and all that stuff is neat, and it's great that you can automatically download the show and listen to it at your convenience if this show isn't at a convenient time now. And you know that most of our shows we do a solid show without breaking in and doing, we don't do commercials here on the KPFT. We don't do underwriting by people like BP or et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, Slamma.
Yeah. So,
or Exxon.
We are, and that's why we're poor. We're very poor because of that.
We're not poor, we're just...
We are poor.
Yes.
Let's be honest,
we're
poor.
We're definitely not overpaid.
So we're asking you to make that pledge. Call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Make that call now. We're going to break, do one piece of music, and then we will come back and start our show.
to become one, to become. This is what it feels like when to become one, yeah.
That is a group called Haberdashery, and the name of the song, To Become One. It's from their Valence album, which is actually a private label release from 2009.
When you listen to KPFT, you're listening to a brash experiment in democracy. I'm Ernesto Aguilar. I'm KPFT's program director, and I'm sure that you'll agree that when you listen to this station, you will hear something that is unique to the Houston airwaves. And when you call 713-526-5738, you're making a pledge for more than just a thank you gift or the program you're listening to. You're supporting the idea that commercial-free radio, radio with integrity, radio with heart and with soul, is something that Houston needs. Maybe you discovered this station accidentally while flipping the dial, and you heard something that caught your fancy, and you began coming back over and over again. Maybe you got word of the station from a friend. Or maybe you saw a bumper sticker, and you decided, hey, 90.1, think I'll check that out. Soon you find yourself coming back to the station again and again and again, and you find things that you really love. Maybe you find things you don't love so much, but you like the idea that a different kind of voice is on the airwaves here. That's what KPFT is all about. We have this patchwork quilt of a schedule, and we give space for virtually anyone and everyone to speak their minds, to share their passions, to present to you a little bit of Houston that you don't otherwise get anywhere else. Whether it's blues or folk or hip-hop or Zydeco or Tejano, whether it's talk from a liberal or a conservative or a middle-of-the-road kind of viewpoint, you get it here on KPFT. Programs like Open Journal allow virtually anybody from the community to propose an idea and do a program. Great music helps boost your spirits. Great news programming helps inform you. We make you laugh, we make you smile. Sometimes we annoy you. But all the time, KPFT brings you something that Houston just wouldn't be quite the same without. I'm asking you to go to the phone right now to dial 713-526-5738 and support an idea. Support an idea of free speech. Support an idea of unique culture. Support an idea for independent music and independent thinking on a radio dial where, sadly, that's pretty much going extinct. The number to call is 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. You are listening to 90.1 KPFT Houston. We do need your pledge of support. And I'm asking for you to please go to your phone to make that contribution, because we do need you. 713-526-5738.
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And Brian Lemica.
And we have in our studio tonight Kristen Williams, the director of the Transgender Foundation of America here in Houston, and Daniel Wibbins, a board member of the same organization. About 2 weeks ago, in the green room, we were started a conversation concerning the GLBT community. And one of the questions was, why is it that at this moment in time, there's been a lot of focus on the transgender community, but there's still a separation from trans and the GLB community. But even more so, there's still a division between the G's and the L's, the gays and the lesbians and all of us. And how, one, we were talking about the problem, but also, what is the solution? So we're going to have a frank discussion tonight about all of that. Yes, absolutely. And Frank isn't here.
Frank's not here. So Daniel and Kristen, y'all aren't related. No relation.
No.
We were actually trying to figure that out in the lobby.
No.
Your yes. Brother and sister from different families.
Well, apparently, yes.
Well, to start off, do you agree that there's a separation within the GL and the B and T community? Are we kind of columns of individuals? Or do we?
My perspective is probably a lot different than many people. My focus is primarily on the Transgender Center, where, you know, many of our board members are gay. They are not trans. We have a transgender, in fact, our kind of flagship transgender meeting is led by a gay man. We have transgender yoga, run by a lesbian-identified woman. And so, you know, at the Transgender Center, a lot of the gay, lesbian, bi community is very active and, you know, always there. At the socials that we have that have 50 or 100 people, usually about half are, you know, GLB individuals. And so I'm kind of blinded by that, I think.
But I think it's important to look outside of just kind of our organizations. I think often organizations such as the caucus, such as the center, do a much better job of purposely being inclusive than we do ourselves within a social sphere.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think there's an assumption in particular by gay men, and you know, I don't want to speak for lesbians or bisexuals, but I think there's an assumption in particular by gay men that transgender individuals are just another kind of gay. Like, you know, first you were bisexual, then you were gay, then you were really, really gay, then you were really, really, really gay, and then you became transgender.
Listen.
yeah, exactly.
So it's the viewpoint is that they're just another subcategory of gay and not a different segment of the community.
And so attitude develops along the lines that, well, I'm gay, therefore I understand the transgender experience, therefore I don't have to make an effort to reach out to trans individuals. I don't have to try to understand what trans-identified people are experiencing. And I think we see that in particular around the use of the T word by gay men.
That would be tranny.
Which I'm going to choose not to say.
Is that a disparaging word for our listeners? Do we not want to use that? Does that... How do you feel about that word?
Well, that word, within the trans community, it can be kind of a word of, you know, it's you can use it in a way of reclaiming that word. But generally, in the overall community, the straight community, anywhere outside the trans community, that word is usually seen as derogatory. It's used in a disparaging way most of the time by non-trans people.
Yeah. Well, I would compare it to using the N-word within the black community.
Yes.
Black people may do use it between one another, but don't you dare be from the outside and say something like that. And you know, we might use the term tranny sometimes. I try to avoid it because it is disparaging.
Well, you hear it all the time.
Right, but there is a difference between a trans-identified individual who's making a choice to reclaim a disparaging word and a cisgendered individual, and I should probably define that term
as better tell
well.
Some people may not know that term.
Cisgender is a term that's used to refer to people who are comfortable in the gender they were assigned at birth. So that people like me who were born male, who everyone growing up always said, you're a boy, who identify as male.
Got it.
But there's a difference between a trans-identified individual choosing to reclaim a word that's disparaging and a cisgender individual insisting on using that word.
Right.
Understood.
Yeah. Okay. The question, though, is, and I've heard this, and when other people aren't learning, the jokes are still there.
Of course.
The jokes are still there, and if you have a group of other individuals who might be staying around, there's always the tranny joke.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
They're always the trans joke, you know, and it's it's hurtful.
It is, and I think
it's very hurtful. And you know, and if they recognize you heard it, they become very, you know, shamed behind it, with rare exception.
Or defensive.
That, you know, it's okay for me to do that.
And I think a lot of that gets back to that idea that a lot of gay men have, that where we have a tendency to assume that we can understand the trans experience.
Yeah. I quote one of Barney Frank's earlier comments many years ago about trans people, and said his comment was that they're just gay men that like to wear a dress.
Right. Yeah.
And
not the case.
But the fact is that it's that kind of mindset that still exists.
Very much so.
It's kind of an arrogance that you understand the experience of someone that you're not really
you can't really relate to unless you're in their shoes.
Well, and I think, you know, as children, when we hurt one of our little playmates, our parents set us aside and say, now how would you feel if your playmate did that to you? We're taught to understand other people's experience through the lens of our own experience. And as adults, that's a very limited tool for empathy. It's difficult to, for me, as an individual who's always been comfortable as a man, who was born a man and is always told, you're a man, to understand the experience of someone who grew up being told, you're a woman, who was felt inside that they're a man. I will never be able to completely understand what that is like. And I've been had the privilege of working with the trans community for almost a decade now. Until, and I'm going to speak for gay men, until gay men are able to recognize that we will never be able to capture that experience, that division in the community, I think, will remain.
Is it a matter of just knowing someone that's trans and just, you know, becoming a friend and, you know, being able to emotionally connect with someone and then identifying that way? Is it that we don't know people in the community and we don't have that experience?
But isn't that the way we connect with anyone? Is right. We have to get to know them and know part of their experience. We can't have lived it, but we are empathetic to it by understanding and knowing more.
I mean, especially in the gay community, we're all, you know, come out, make sure that we're known and that people know at least one gay person. Well, is this not the same in the gay community knowing a trans person?
Well, there's some differences in the trans community. Sometimes the trans community is, you know, I hate to use this word, but migratory. You know, they come into the GLBT community and sometimes they stick around for a little bit and they leave and go stealth. And
for anyone who doesn't know what the term stealth means, what does that mean, Kristen?
Well, that means when you decide that you're going to live as if you were born biologically male or female, whichever gender you transition to, and, you know, tell nobody.
Yeah, you move away to live out your life as the as your chosen gender without going back, trying to hide, basically.
Hide, yes.
You go into a bigger closet. You just found you a bigger closet. Let's take a brief moment and...
We've been talking to Daniel Williams and Christian Williams about the separation in the GLBT community and the distance between the transgender portion of the community and the rest of the community. But if you're enjoying this segment and other segments on Queer Voices and KPFT, we invite you to call in now. I don't hear the phones ringing. 713-526-KPFT or 526-5738.
It is really quiet out there in the lobby.
That's bad.
Yes, it's really bad. And this is the GLBT program that's on every week on Monday. Certainly, we wish we were on a little bit earlier. It may be a little bit late for some of you all, but you know, you do have the option of being able to listen to it in the future. And hope that you, if you're listening to it tomorrow or sometime during the week, that you will make that call. But there are people out there listening now. I know the economy's tough. I know, you know, all these bills are going up, utility bills and stuff like that. But this is an important thing. KPFT is a very important community resource. If you go up and down that dial on AM or FM, you won't hear too many local shows. You won't hear too many shows that are produced by community activists. And this is the only station where it's done on in Houston. And if you think that's important, if you think that the community is part of the spectrum that should be on the air doing mass media, please call us now. Please call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
Well, back to our discussion, and we were talking with Kristen Williams and Daniel Williams and Brian here, and I'm Jennifer. Let's go back to where we were. We were talking about some of the separation, but do we have a solution for it?
What can we do as a community, as individuals, or is it a group effort?
Well, I think that I think that a lot of it has to do with, you know, again, my perception kind of comes from an organization perspective. And what that means for me is that groups you know, need to be inclusive, and groups on a peer level need to refrain from encouraging disparaging statements or attitudes, and create those norms within their own organizations, within their own small pockets, their communities, their bars, those kinds of things. And I think that spreads out.
Well, one thing, when you said that, I was thinking of HRC back in 2007 when the INDA came up.
Mm-hmm.
And they,
I was going to bring
they
up
opted them, for the, you know, the non-inclusive. In other words, throw the T's under the bus.
And
the fact was is that they were insensitive, even though they had T's on their board, insensitive to the plight of the community, and they never really embraced transgender people as members of the community.
Well, I was going to ask, do you think that that's one issue, especially now, that's dividing the community? I've noticed that the right wing has really ramped up their propaganda machine. They're focusing on transgender people. You know, they've turned INDA into the so-called transgender bathroom bill.
The bathroom panic.
Yes.
Well, and that's, I agree, because it's still the weakest link in the GLBT, you know. For many years, the T was always silent.
Right.
And in a small letter T, not a capital. And it was the incident concerning the non-inclusive that got, that energized the community, the GLBT community all over the nation, forming United INDA organization, and got HRC changing their attitude, and they've been working on diversity for 3 years now to make sure that trans people were included in that.
And that really was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yes.
And I think you see more and more organizations making a concerted effort to try to address trans inclusion within their organizations. I was very proud of the GLBT caucus, political caucus here in Houston at the meeting. Last Monday, there was a discussion on immigration issues, and there was a brief moment where it looked like some trans-sensitive issues might be taken out of a resolution
Yes.
that was being considered, and the room just kind of surged forward, and one person had asked a question, an innocent question out of ignorance, and five or six people stood up and said, we need to do this because it includes our trans brothers and sisters.
Exactly. Mm. And I think that was, what broke it was that 2007 to 2008, and is a change. And what has happened, from my perspective, what I've seen is the right wing, the naysayers, if you
right.
will, the just say no's, they see that as an issue because general population, with a generational change coming, gay and lesbianism is, you know, it's not that far and dark, mysterious
right.
thing now because gays and lesbians are on television and movie stars, country and western performers. But the trans people, there have only been a few people, and it's the ignorance, I think. And they're
right.
they're playing on that ignorance.
Well, and I think they're playing on the ignorance of the LGBT community as a whole. If they know if we can be divided,
yes.
we are less strong. And I would say that's a systemic issue that comes from the bottom up. Organizations can make an effort to change, but until individuals make that same effort, organizational efforts will fail.
Now, on an individual level, if you are a witness to some slanderous remark, something that's said in your group of friends or someone that you know, acquaintance, how would you react, or how should one react?
Well, in that situation, I would say to act the way you would any time an offensive topic came up and say, you know, that's a word that hurts people who I care about, and I would prefer that you not use it when I'm here, and I'd be happy to talk to you about that. In the broader spectrum, I would say that well-meaning LGBT people need to learn to take the opinion of trans individuals on the trans experience as greater than their own opinion. And that's very, very difficult for human beings to do,
yes.
to give other people's opinion a greater weight.
Yes, actually, I was going to say one thing that I've seen recently that was pretty divisive in the GLBT community was a film that was just produced by a gay man called Ticked Off Trannies with Knives. And it debuts at the Tribeca Film Festival, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he felt like...
the director.
Yes. What is
his Diego name? Luna.
Yes, Luna. He felt that he, you know, and the tagline to the film was, it takes balls to get vengeance or something like that. And they were kind of hawking the movie by using the recent deaths of real life transgender people. And, you know, the movie itself is pure camp, and he's very, you know, he says that it's an exploitative film. He's very upfront about that. But he, as he refuses to acknowledge that the film is, you know, insulting, belittling, degrading, and exploitive in the bad sense. And I've noticed that, especially in Dallas, where I believe this was made, that was a huge, huge explosive issue.
Well, too many times stuff like that occurs. You know, we'll have something positive about trans people, and then all of a sudden there'll be something negative like this, and it's exploited. And it's exploited to drive a wedge between and within our community. The political right wing, who is the naysayers concerning our civil rights, are always trying to find a wedge item to divide us. They found it with the non-inclusive ENDA, and they're still trying to upend the ENDA, to upend all of the other movements, for progressive movements as far as GLBT community, by dividing us. And they know that that will succeed, because they know that if you separate the trans from something, the same thing occurs. What happened in 2007 will happen again. It divided the community.
Well, and there are even efforts to divide the trans community. We saw recently here in Houston where Mayor Parker signed a broad non-discrimination executive order.
Orders.
Thank you, executive order. And the reaction that came from the radical right was, you're going to have cross-dressers in the bathroom.
Well, not only cross-dressers, it was kind of insinuated that these would be biological men, you know, just kind of hanging around in men's clothing, you know, just because they say that they're transgender, or, you know, these, you know, people just kind of hanging out in the women's restroom waiting to pounce on you. And I believe that the right wing even characterized this this issue as a, you know, a sexual act, making sexual acts in the bathroom permissible.
Sort of like right wingers going to gay bars and having sex in airport restrooms. Is that what
slammer.
Hey, I'm going to call it like it is.
Well, I have to have someone to carry my luggage.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We only have a couple of minutes left. What would be your recommendation, Kristen?
Well, my recommendation would be, is really, really simple. When you hear a friend, a coworker, say something disparaging about GLBT people, and you know, anyone within the entire community, say something. Speak up. Let them know that it's not okay. Change those norms.
And I would ask that LGBT people, when you are speaking with a trans-identified individual who tells you what their experience as a trans person is, to take what they're telling you on the face of it. Don't try to say, well, yeah, I can understand that because I had to come out to my parents too. Or, yeah, I can understand that because I had this other problem. It's a different issue. You will not be able to understand it fully, but you can believe other people when they tell you that a word is hurtful, or that a process is difficult, or that their community feels a certain way.
We've been speaking to...
What do you think, Brian?
Well, I was going to kind of wrap it up, but I think, you know, to allow anything said against this last portion of our community, which we are an oppressed people as a whole, but to allow this internalized separation towards this discrimination towards this one segment of our population is hypocritical. I mean, we are oppressed. So don't oppress ourselves.
I would like to remind everyone who's listening as well in that it's almost impossible for a gay man to understand the lesbian experience, the lesbian to understand the gay experience, the gay male experience, the transgender to understand either one of those, that within our the bisexual experience. Mm. Even though we don't understand, truly empathize, or as Heinlein said, grok, what it is, we need to understand that we don't need to understand. We need to understand only that we have this division and that we are oppressed in many ways, and we all have to fight together.
Mm.
Yeah. We've been talking with Kristen Williams and Daniel Williams, and Brian's with us. And if you like this and you want us to do some more of it,
make our phones ring. I hear nothing outside. Jack, do we have anything outside going on?
No, it's really quiet out there. And in fact, I'm reading some of the signs here, like this thing about remind people from the last pledge drive to pay. Do not let certain. That's not that pledge stuff. But anyway, that's it. We don't usually have to do this. Most of the weeks we're on the air, we're not reading, we're not talking about people giving money, although we'd always like people to be able to have that chance, and there is always that chance on the website. But we have some special weeks, and these are some of the special weeks where we have pledge drives. And you know, Pacifica is the foundation that actually started listener-sponsored radio, where the listeners are, we're beholden to the listeners, not to the advertisers, not to the corporations. We're beholden to the listeners. And the listeners are number one here at KPFT. The listeners are why we're here. All of us here at Queer Voices are volunteers. We come in every Monday. We put the show together. We're lucky enough to get some great guests, some community people who are very much involved in the community on the ground. On the ground level, grassroots community. And that's what KPFT represents, grassroots community. So be able to do this. It's not free. It costs money to keep the transmitter on. You know, you all know your utility bills are getting higher. You're having tougher times making, and we know it's tough. It's very tough out there. People are not employed, but some of you are, and some of you would be able to spare a little bit of money and maybe give up some of that Starbucks coffee a day or two, or give up some of that cable for maybe a little while, and or some of those pay channels, because this is real grassroots radio. This is what affects your life. And you listen to KPFT during the day, during the evening, overnight. You hear the music that's not played anywhere else. You hear issues discussed that are heard nowhere else. It's really talking about things. And in fact, you watch some of those news channels on cable, and it's like there's no news on it anymore. It's all gossip. It's all talking about different personalities. But the real news and the real issues that are going on in the community is heard here on KPFT by people who are involved in the community. So we're asking you to become involved with KPFT. You can come involved by calling us at 713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Jen Mahoney.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 8th, 2010. Police fired tear gas to disperse protesters in the Lithuanian capital of Vilnius on May 8th, as about 400 LGBT rights activists held their first ever pride march and rally in the overwhelmingly Roman Catholic country. About 800 riot police officers, some on horseback, moved in to disperse a crowd of up to 3,000 counter-demonstrators at the end of the two-hour Baltic Pride 2010 march, as they hurled rocks, bottles, and smoke bombs from behind security barriers. Police reported 19 arrests, including two Lithuanian lawmakers who attempted to climb over the barriers. Earlier in the day, a Molotov cocktail was thrown at the office of Youth for Tolerance, one of the groups that helped organize the event. The device failed to ignite, and no one was injured. Organizers won a last-minute appeals court ruling 2 days earlier, overturning a lower court decision to ban the event. Despite the tension, most media reports describe the atmosphere as festive, with participants marching under a huge rainbow banner and dancing to music blaring from loudspeakers. The event also drew foreign participants, including members of the European Parliament, openly gay German MP Volker Beck,
and Sweden's European Affairs Minister, Birgitta Olsen.
A court in the Moldovan capital of Chisinau ruled in late April that the country's leading LGBT rights group, GenderDocM, could not stage a May 2nd demonstration in the city center. The group wanted to rally support for passage of an anti-discrimination law. The court said the rally, capping 5 days of LGBT pride events, had to take place in a secluded park away from downtown, supposedly to protect public order and morality. GenderDocM refused to hold a metaphorically closeted event and canceled the demonstration. In 2007, the nation's Supreme Court ruled that the ban of a 2006 Pride event had been illegal and violated the European Convention on Human Rights and Fundamental Freedoms. Local officials, however, have simply ignored the determination. Efforts each year since to hold a Pride march or rally have been plagued by violence. This year, Pride events other than the canceled rally proceeded without interference. They included workshops, an art exhibit, a safer sex promotion party, a concert, and the much-anticipated crowning of the International Transvestite Beauty Contest, Miss Flawless Queen 2010.
Mumbai's International Queer Film Festival 2010. India's first such event was held in late April in venues around the city. The sometimes censorious Information and Broadcasting Ministry kept its hands off the festival, approving all 110 movies, screened over a four-day period without any cuts. A Delhi High Court ruling last year decriminalized consensual private adult gay sex in India, and the country awaits a Supreme Court ruling that's expected to uphold the Delhi decision and certify its nationwide impact.
A traveling version of St. Petersburg, Russia's queer film festival, Side by Side, was banned in the Siberian city of Kemerovo last month, but was a big success in Novosibirsk. On the day the event was to begin in Kemerovo, the city withdrew support for the festival and pressured the local movie house hosting it to back out. Local organizers found another venue for the 3 days of screenings in mid-April. A few days later, in Novosibirsk, Russia's third largest city, the scene was much different. Some 700 people attended 4 days of movies, and the festival received support from local officials and media. It also included a photo exhibit, a lecture on early gay cinema in Germany, and three panel discussions on gay parenting, LGBT rights, and coming out.
Elsewhere, Argentina's lower legislative chamber, the House of Deputies, approved a marriage equality bill this week that would also open adoption to same-gender couples. The vote of 125 to 109 followed 12 hours of heated debate and marked the first time a national legislative house in Latin America has approved a same-gender marriage bill. President Cristina Fernandez has expressed her support for the measure. The Roman Catholic Church strongly opposes the legislation, however, and the bill's supporters expect a more difficult challenge in the Senate.
China has lifted its ban on HIV-positive visitors. The State Council also lifted travel bans on people with leprosy and sexually transmitted diseases. Bans remain in place for people with serious mental illness, tuberculosis, and other infectious diseases, which the Council said could possibly greatly harm the public health.
Fallout continues from the letter last week by U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates, essentially urging Congress to hold off on passing legislation to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell this year. Protest actions against the ban on military service by open gays and lesbians also continued. The Advocate reported that passage of a repeal measure this year is on life support, with sources telling the paper that some moderate Democrats might be reluctant to vote against the Defense Secretary's recommendations. The White House also issued a statement supporting Gates. Others are pushing the idea of a moratorium on discharges under the policy until the Pentagon completes its review of how repeal would be implemented, which is expected to be completed in December. Meanwhile, six civilian demonstrators were arrested on May 2nd after chaining themselves to the White House gates. About 150 people rallied across the street, including Lieutenant Dan Choi, who is under a court order to stay outside a certain perimeter after he was twice arrested for handcuffing himself to the White House gates in April. An unexpected appearance at the rally by Howard Dean buoyed the crowd. The former Vermont governor and former chair of the Democratic National Committee voiced his support for their efforts.
Dan Choi is here, and if Dan Choi were still translating Arabic, we'd just be another step ahead of the game. We can't afford to lose any talented people. And to kick talented people out of the military because they happen to be gay or lesbian makes no sense at all. let me just make my case. This is the case that I make all over the country for equal rights, not just don't ask, don't tell, getting rid of don't ask, don't tell, but marriage equality and everything else. The fact of the matter is, the first guy who took a bullet for George W. Bush when he sent our troops to Iraq was a staff sergeant in the United States Army named Eric Alva. Eric Alva is a gay man. And if somebody is brave enough to take a bullet for the United States of America, then they ought to have equal rights under the law when they come home just like everybody else does. This is about what kind of a country we are, whether we'll stand up for those who stand up for us. This is a community that's demonstrated their courage, they've given their lives, and now it's time to allow them to say who they are. Thanks very much.
Dean issued an open letter to President Obama on May 8th, reiterating many of those comments and urging him to keep his oft-repeated promise to secure repeal this year.
In other news, a relative flurry of celebrity coming outs have followed pop star Ricky Martin's announcement that he was living La Vida Abierta last month. Australian former Olympic swimmer Daniel Kowalski came out in an article he wrote for the Melbourne-based newspaper The Age. Despite the dark, fearful, and lonely times, he said at the end of the article, being able to write this fills me with a sense of freedom, pride, and relief. Kowalski won a gold medal in the 4x200-meter freestyle relay at the 2000 Summer Olympics. At the 1996 Games, he won a silver medal in the 1500-meter freestyle and bronze medals in the 400-meter freestyle and 200-meter freestyle.
After years of speculation about his sexuality, popular Zimbabwe actor Frank Malaba has confirmed that he's gay. The Sunday Standard said a legion of his female fans who drooled on his dashing boyish looks will be disappointed to learn that he is in a relationship with a man in South Africa, where he now lives. I think the problem with the world we live in today is that people make a huge deal of issues they hardly understand, he told the paper. I don't think there has been any room in Africa to explore the diversity of people that we have and are. Despite Zimbabwe's notoriously homophobic political leadership and societal condemnation, Malaba hasn't exactly been in hiding. The newspaper said he hosts a gay radio talk show called Outspoken in South Africa that's heard across the southern region of the continent.
U.S. country music star Shelley Wright came out in People magazine and other outlets this week. She told ABC News that it was a matter of life or death for me emotionally, spiritually, physically. It became time for me. She said for many years she prayed three times a day, please, 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 God, don't let me be gay. The now 39-year-old singer says she brought her secret to Nashville, where she scored a number one hit with Single White Female. I know the sin for me is to lie, and I've been lying my whole life, she said. Wright has a new album coming out and a new book, Like Me, that she hopes will help young gays and lesbians. She doesn't seem to be worried about country music's less than sterling acceptance of gays and lesbians. I feel I have a responsibility to stand up because I can, she said, even at the risk of losing fans. I know I will be okay.
And finally, the annual International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia, known by the acronym IDAHO, will be observed on Monday, May 17th. Worldwide events this year include a campaign against religious homophobia and a Great Global Kiss-In. You can get more information online and perhaps find an event near you at www.idahomophobia.org.
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 8th, 2010. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Jen Mahoney.
It's time to call
713-526-5738
or light up the phones.
Well, actually, those won't light up because the phones are all switched to the bullpen out there.
Oh, okay.
The green room, I think.
I was wondering why no one was calling in. You need to be calling in out there and pledging, because where else can you hear? A couple. We were talking.
Well, we have somebody to thank. Chad.
Oh, good.
It's a first-time membership, which is great.
Thank you so
that's
much.
That's what we're really looking for, the new people. Because the old people, we do follow up with you with mailers and emails.
Yeah,
and
we'll find you.
Phone calls. But actually, if you haven't renewed in a while, we would appreciate that. I was listening to Weekend Edition on Sunday, and the person who was doing the puzzle, they always ask, what is your member station at the end? And this person said, well, I'm a member of three stations. And mm-hmm. I thought that was really neat. And there is a lot of people who are members of more than one station. I mean, we do have a couple other great stations here in Houston, KTSU, which is does a lot of jazz, and of course KUHF does a lot of NPR stuff and has a good local news team now, which is great. But
where else do you hear GLBT
yes,
news?
Yes, exactly. We're not over there. We're over here. And as people says, we're right on the dial between jazz and Jesus. And that's a very important
I hadn't
place.
Heard that.
This is actually, it was Mary Helen, who used to be the station manager, that said this years ago. It is important. 90.1 is a very prominent place. We've been here for 40 years here in Houston, and Pacifica has been on the air for over 50 years, if I'm correct. Starting out in Berkeley, there's five stations. You've heard that on the other programs. We're only the only group owner of community radio stations throughout the country. And even though there's five only five stations, that covers about 20, 25, 30. I'm making these numbers up because I'm not sure, but I think it's at least 20, if not like 30% of the population can receive a Pacifica station because they're in big major cities, and they're concentrated around like New York, Los Angeles. In fact, the station in Los Angeles probably has one of the best FM signals in the entire country. It's sort of a strange anomaly that happened there. But community radio is very important. It's still there. It's still at the grassroots. Sometimes we're not as polished as we wish we could be, although we're a lot more polished than we used to be. We used to have those reel-to-reel machines where we used to just squeak and squawk and used to hear all the hum and hiss and stuff like that. We used to go off the air a lot. Luckily, we're doing better these days, and it's a lot of thank yous to the people who keep the station on the air, who we've been able to afford a little bit better transmitters that don't fail all the time and have better electricity and air conditioning where the transmitters are. All that type of stuff is important. But if you come by the station here, you will see that sometimes our air conditioning doesn't work, but that doesn't matter. What matters here is the programming, what's on the air, the fact that we have people from the community doing radio shows, talking about things that are at issue. And sometimes we conflict with each other because we're not all in the same mind, which is good, that we can have this discussion of different viewpoints that's not heard on some of the other radio stations. So we're asking you to please pick up the phone, call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
Out here at KPFT is the difference in the programming, and Jack mentioned that. But what it is, we've been here 40 years now. We've been bombed off the air. We've been shot at. Why? Because we're not afraid to speak up about things that other people won't talk about, that ideas and conversations that are suppressed by other stations. Here is where the voice of the community can actually speak, whether it be the GLBT community or whatever community it is. That's why it's a community station. It's supported by you. Opening your checkbook, writing a check, calling in that pledge at 713-526-5738. It's important that you take the time to make the call.
Yeah.
song was called For Your Entertainment from an album of the same name, actually, by Adam Lambert. And again, a private release label from 2009.
We know you can't spend all your time in Iraq to follow what's going on, so you can count on KPFT to do it for you. You can't spend your days following the new agenda in Congress or its dealings with the White House, so you can count on KPFT to do that too. You can't spend your days listening to all the new music to find the best artists and songs. You can count on KPFT. Your support keeps KPFT on the air and gives you news, information, and music you don't hear anywhere else. That's why we're asking for your financial support today. Please make your gift to KPFT.org or call 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT right now. Continuing to meet your expectations, KPFT depends on your financial support. Contributing listeners provide over 90% of KPFT's funding. So please take a moment right now and make a gift to KPFT at 713-526-5738 or online at kpft.org. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio. KPFT, Houston.
And somebody already got in to the move by contributing $75. So we would like to thank Megan for that. This is Queer Voices.
And, you know, you still have an opportunity to donate to KPFT. And the number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Before we get into our next interview, I want to sort of mention, this actually be a little bit of a transition. This past Saturday, there was a HIV, AIDS, and the Law conference that was free, open to the public, although it was geared to both attorneys and to people who work in the social services field, that was co-sponsored by the Montrose Counseling Center and the Houston Bar Association AIDS Outreach Committee. And it was really, really a good seminar, talked about different things, and we'll probably follow up on this by having some of the panelists on some of our future shows. But what was really neat is driving into this event in the parking lot at the Montrose Counseling Center at 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning and seeing that lot almost full. It just means so much to me to see that their first floor, which is their community floor, that's a lot of different organizations in, is being utilized so much. And it's such a nice space. Transition to that a few weeks ago, Megan Stabler and Paul Guillory were put together this meeting along with many other people, the Men's Gathering Group and HRC, about bringing the community together. And this is sort of the theme of tonight's show. And we don't usually sort of have a post-interview type of thing, but I thought this would be really interesting to talk about. I know you worked real hard in putting this thing together, and I thought it was a success, but I don't know, what was your feeling?
My feeling about the event is the fact that definitely it was a success, and to me, where you have groups that are getting together that maybe have not traditionally had dialogue with each other, there may have been, I had talked previously about, you know, the studies that we did and the surveys that we did, but when you're in a room and you actually get to experience the voice of difference that's right there, to me that's always a good thing, because it is about building relationship. And when you are actually in the room together and you get the opinions of people, mm-hmm. in this particular case we were specifically talking about HRC and the Black LGBT community, when you're actually have opportunities to speak to, you know, to people from that ethnic background, you start to hear a voice. And so whenever the voice is being stated, that automatically is successful because there's an opportunity to be heard, and that's significant.
I agree with you totally. I mean, it's not like everybody was harming. You know, there was different voices, there was different opinions, there was concerns, but we opened up the dialogue. And I think that was really important.
It was really important, and I'll go back to the fact that it was important enough for you to take note of it. And I think somebody like yourself who took note saw some significance. And when we look at, you know, different LGBT organizations and we see what we can do and having really the opportunity to do things better, when you actually start to address the diversity within the LGBT community, that's significant, because a lot of times people think our diversity is the LGBT. But across LGBT is the Asian, the male, the female, the Latino, the African American, the Anglo, etc.
Well, one of the things was, because I was there with y'all, also was the frank discussion around certain stereotypes.
Scusi.
And
just have to do this. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT, Houston.
And the frank conversation, questions that mm-hmm. people had, concerns, and it was in an environment where they felt comfortable enough to bring up those concerns. And I thought that was very significant. And that has a lot to do with the way you set up the meeting and created the environment for that. That speaks highly of everyone that put it together.
Megan, what's your thought about some of the stereotypes and responses that you heard?
Well, first off, I hate stereotypes, because we're all trying to fight for the same things, and that's our equality and rights. But you know, I think a lot of it, and it isn't just the amazing work that Paul Gilroy's done here for the local HRC community and the LGBT community in general. But you know, we often forget to look across the tracks, and I think that's important that we need to. You know, a lot of us that are in jobs and employment have health care. We also forget there are parts of our community that don't have access to some of these things. And essentially, we're all really fighting for the same thing. And I probably put it down to four things. That is the right to serve, hence why repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell is important. The right to work, which is why Employment Non-Discrimination Act is so important to us. The right to love, and that's why repealing DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act, a terrible word for it as well, you know, we need to do that. And the right to live, and that is sort of, you know, getting the United American Families Act and that law through. And none of those things that I just talked about see color. So color is blind when it comes to that, but because we have different communities with lower incomes, with lower expectations, but with the same needs, or we have different incomes and different needs, whether you're black, white, you know, whatever it may be, we're all trying to do the same thing. So what Paul was able to do is really bring together these groups. I'm not even going to say diverse groups, because we're all really wanted the same thing out of this. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't so much speaking as it was listening and understanding people's perceptions and understanding where they're coming from and how they feel that way, and you know, giving back the fact that, yeah, we hear you, and that we really are needing to be on the same page as we move for this. And you know, there are thoughts in the community about HRC being that sort of elitist gay white male club. Mm-hmm. In reality, when you even look at our steering committee, and you know firsthand, Jennifer, you know, I think white gay male is probably somewhat of a leaning minority on the steering committee itself, because it is made up of different individuals. And that's what we want to get across, is that we wanted to bring it. And Paul just did, and others did a fantastic job of bringing the men's gathering together, which is not just men, it's also women as well, to voice their feelings, not just their opinions, but their feelings about things.
Well, one of the things that I saw and experienced in that, everyone out there, what you would have missed, and you need to know about it in the future so you can be part of it, was we start seeing the similarities in our own desires.
Mm-hmm.
The people speaking frankly about their own issues, about HRC, mm-hmm. about their own lives and their mm-hmm. own experience, but yet they were able to see the similarities
mm-hmm.
with, you know, no color, race, whatever was dividing it. We all have those same
exactly.
desires and needs.
Yeah. And the idea that Paul has is to bring them together. And, you know, kudos to Paul for doing this continuously. I mean, it's not just this program. Mm-hmm. We did a great program around Waisora as well, and bring together the Latino community and Latina community to actually think about, you know, registering and citizenship and everything else that you know, we've helped them with as well. So I think this was the start of a dialogue. I don't think that we went into it really expecting to bring people over and everything else, but it's the continuation of a dialogue that we need to go ahead and have. I mean,
yeah.
What do you think?
I agree. I think when you bring people together, that, you know, initially the opportunity is to look at differences,
mm-hmm.
you do uncover and you find out that you have more similarities than difference. And I think what's important is that people have to feel connected to something.
Mm-hmm.
And the actual dialogue had an opportunity to look at stereotypes like HRC is a rich white gay male organization and say, well, you know what? Sometimes that may be true, but that's not an absolute. And so when we start looking at the reality of what it is, we then can see that, hey, I can see myself as part of this. Now, we do understand that the opportunities for change, that's difficult, but when you step in and you see the possibility, there's a willingness to take that step. And I think that's what took place, and that taking that step was on both sides. Mm-hmm. HRC seeing where they can take a step forward, not wait for people to come to them, and the people in the audience seeing, wait a minute, I have a responsibility. If I want to get connected, I have to step up and volunteer.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, and part of that is communication. And we recognize that, you know, as a national organization, we also have a communications issue sometimes too. Because some of the things that I heard from people was, we don't see you doing anything, or we don't hear you doing anything. And then when you ask the question, how would you like us to communicate with you? It's like, well, I don't know. So, and is it the Facebook groups, or is that going away? Is it a Google group? Is it newsletters? Is it something else? So I think part of it is knowing that work is going on at the national level that impacts them in their daily lives. And that's really what we've got to connect to as a national organization, is how it impacts the daily lives of everybody, regardless of their ethnicity, their financial background, their stability in life, whatever it is just as I said, the right to serve, right? The right to work, the right to love, and the right to live. And then what are the federal legislation that connect that?
Well, one of the things I thought was significant that came out of it, because the perception of many in the group about HRC, but also, it's a lobbying group up in Washington. How does that affect me where I live?
Mm-hmm.
And then when we brought up some of the other issues around schools, mm-hmm. About religion and mm-hmm. faith, all of these other programs that are going on, again, mm-hmm. under the radar, for the average individual, and yes, there's a communication, but where we did is we started that communication.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let me ask you this. All three of you have been involved in the HRC local,
mm-hmm.
or we're national in some part, but none of you are the rich white men.
Wow.
So,
not anymore.
So did you have to fight to get in, to get at the table?
No.
I did not have to fight, and in fact,
now Jennifer always fights, so that's
she's scrappy.
You know, part of my initial story was that, and I think that's another thing that came out of this dialogue, is the fact that we were able to share our stories to show the reality of our personal experience, and each one of us have different personal experience. However, all of us have some level of passion mm-hmm. to get equality for, you know, LGBT people. And in my case, when I left a church that pretty much rejected me because I acknowledged that I was gay and I couldn't serve in any ministry, mm-hmm. I came across somebody from the Human Rights Campaign and immediately joined, and I had some level of voice at that point. I joined as a Federal Club member. That was in 2005. Well, 2 years later, when I was challenged to really come in and help to deal with some of the issues, they were inviting me in to help with the solutions, not to come in and sit on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like in this perceived white gay male organization, rich white gay male organization, I have more voice here than in any organization I belong to, including places like the Brook Hollow Baptist Church, which is known as the Church Without Walls, which I say they still have a few.
Barriers,
so
at least.
Once I get rid of that stereotype, there's a space available for me to be authentic and empowered and real.
And they didn't ask you to just sit at the table because you're a person of color.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They brought me in because there was an issue that was identified, and now there's a challenge to do something about it. Not to say, oh, it's a reality, let's just forget about it, let's not do anything, but there was actually an energy.
A passion.
And a passion on my part to actually come in, and I feel like HRC has allowed me to have a significant voice.
I'd like to step in there, because I was on the steering committee and the diversity committee at that time, and Paul wrote a letter, making a statement that why aren't you doing this and where is this? And what happened was is that we reached out to Paul to say, okay, if this is how you feel, why don't you come on and let's do something about it? And he took up the mantle, and he hasn't quit yet. So, you know, to me, that just gives me chills every time I hear or see you doing something that's going on, especially with HRC and in the community, because it all started when you make those statements and you say something needs to be done. You better be willing to step up. And that was HRC has been the vehicle.
But I think you bring up something that's very... that is very key with our society. You know, as much as we, I'm very political, as a lot of you know, and as much as we're demanding for our rights, and why is it taking so long, and Obama's been there for 16 months, 1 year, 4 months, etc., why don't we have them? As a society, we expect change to happen immediately. And because of the blogosphere, and because of Facebook, and all these other pages that we can go to and sit at home and sit back and criticize without our face or our eyeball-to-eyeball, discussion and dialogue, it's a lot easier for us to criticize. And if you have an idea and you think that something isn't being done, ask. And it's not like we will absorb you and we will eat you up and then we'll just spit you out, but it just Paul's example, is just prima facie on this, that he had a great observation. And it's not just an observation that I would say Paul has challenged HRC Houston with, but all the other steering committees too are now adopting a lot of the things that Paul has said and have spread diversity not only across the different steering committee roles that they have, but also down. And I think Paul has got some great leadership that he's shown on that.
Yeah, there's this saying that if you always do what you've always done, you always get what you always got. Well, diversity requires that you do something different. But when it's about building coalition, building relationship with people that maybe don't understand you, and having the courage to step out and allow these people to see you, even when some of them would reject you, when you know that you have a family that supports you, it's easier. And it's like, okay, I know if I'm going to fall down, I have people that's going to hold me up. And that's how I feel with my experience in HRC. And as we continue to move forward, yes, I make a lot of people in HRC uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But
we've all been
what?
There.
Yes.
But in different ways.
Me, when we become uncomfortable, that's an opportunity. That's not a reason to stop.
So moving forward now, what is some of the reaction that you've heard after the meeting of trying to bring the community together?
In bringing the community together, I think, first of all, the sharing of stories, like my story, there were other people who shared their story. And the bottom line is that if you want change to take place, you have to be that change. If you want problems to be solved, you have to be part of the solution. So that means not just talking about it, that means doing. So since that time, we have several people that have gotten involved. There's a renewed sense of energy. And not only that, there's an awareness internally, like, okay, it's not just about diversity committee. It's about all of us learning to have that diversity thinking. So I think those are the type things that are taking place. This is a new for us. This is a new fiscal year. And our fiscal year runs from April 1st, 2010 to March 31st, 2011. So we had a diversity committee meeting this week, and we plan on doing a lot of things. One of the things is to expand ourselves into, not just out into the community, but into the steering committee to become a support for the different committees so that we can have more of a diversity thinking. And I think if we do that, we're going to build some healthy connections. Are we going to make mistakes? Yes. But I think if you have the willingness to continue to build those connections, there's going to be good stuff taking place. And one of the things that Megan referred to earlier, this U.S. Order program, the same day that we were dialoguing about race, you know, that night with TMG One Voice, that morning there were over 20 of us that were volunteering in the Latino community to assist legal immigrants in filling out their applications to become citizens. That was major because we are now stepping out of the LGBT community into the larger community and letting people see who we really are.
You know, it's really interesting. Last week we found out that there's a GLBT LULAC committee in Dallas. And we're going to try to talk to them and see how they organize that. And that's all of it, you know, working together and moving forward. So you're talking about bringing the community within the diversity community. What are some of your other plans of moving forward?
Some of the other plans that we have this year is to expand into different areas. One of the areas that we feel that we have a large volunteer, we have a large number of people available who are members and are friends of the Human Rights Campaign. And we feel that a quick way for people to get to know us and a way for us to engage our membership is to have volunteer opportunities. So we want to do that with HIV and AIDS organizations. So this year, we will probably have two or three outreach events where we're actually going to participate with HIV and AIDS organizations to do that. That is an area that we have not participated in before. We're also going to, we have a tremendous relationship with the Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church. This year, we plan on finding at least two other churches that we can partner with. And in the process of doing that, there's all type of diversity that shows up at a church. And so we look at an opportunity to really become more engaged. In the Latino community, where we're continuing to build this relationship with U.S. Order, I think what's going to happen, there's going to be offshoots. There's going to be some organizations within that whole effort where we'll be expanding and doing other things. We plan on having more significant outreach into the straight community. So it's not just about ethnic background, but it's about purposely stepping out to reach and deliver our message to the straight community, so that in the future, as we face things like Proposition 8 or whatever, people will come to know us because we didn't wait for them to come to us. We decided to go out.
Great. Do you have another meeting scheduled, or is that still on the horizon?
I think what's going to happen, one of the issues, and you were there, the issue of racism in the community was brought up. It's not a specific HRC thing. It was just that issue came up. And so TMG One Voice, which is, it's an avenue to talk about a lot of things in the community, and we will probably have a dialogue about that in August. That's not a specific HRC thing, but that will be a community thing. So we're hoping in August to really, really reach out to a large number of people in the community and have some significant diversity in that room to talk about that.
Great. Paul Guillory and Megan Stabler, we appreciate you coming by and updating us on the meeting, and we will definitely have you on again so we can continue this dialogue. And one of the important things you said is that you have to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
And we're asking our listeners now to get involved. How you get involved is picking up the phone, dialing us now at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. It is very important. We have to show that we can carry our weight as one of the many programs here on KPFT. And, we have people out there answering the phones. You can go to kpft.org and you can give, you can pledge that way. And we would really, really appreciate you doing that. We have another person who has pledged, Andy. We really appreciate your first time, and that's even, it's like the virgin callers is who are really looking for the people who've never donated before. But also, if you have donated and you may have lost, you become a virgin again, or
yes,
something for the first time. It's really, really important that you show your support for KPFT, for Pacifica Radio here in Houston, for the fight that we're all working here at KPFT to moving forward, social justice, bringing people who don't have a voice anywhere else. That's all in the theme of what we're trying to do. And it's really important that you do it now. Do it for Queer Voices. Do it for, you know, it's really interesting, our name, Queer Voices. I thought we'd have some, when we decided to move, change the name from Lesbian and Gay Voices to Queer Voices, we thought maybe there'd be some people who were not really happy about that. We never got any complaints. Maybe people just didn't want to complain, but we're asking you to pitch in, keep KPFT alive, keep Queer Voices alive, keep the free speech movement here in Houston alive. Anybody that, like, subscribed to the Chronicle over the past year, you notice how small it's getting. Less and less news. ABC's have had, you know, had layoffs. In fact, ABC Radio's in bankruptcy right now, which was the biggest radio corporation in the, you know, had some of the biggest stations around the country. Of course, some of that was just bad decisions. But KPFT is here. We're struggling all the time, but we're still here. So we're asking you to call us right now at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. And now we're going to go forward with Joan.
Joan Devlin. Yeah, we're going to go out to the fertile cornfields of Iowa. And Joan Devlin, and Joan has a guest. Joan, who is your guest this evening?
My guest this evening is Kevin Scott Hall. He is a singer-songwriter. JD has probably played you some of his work. But he has ventured into new territory here with his first novel called Off the Charts, and it's absolutely wonderful.
Joan, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
So do we have Kevin?
Yes.
Ah, yes, Kevin. Hi, I just want to say this novel is just amazing. Where did you come up with this? This is just great. This novel about a young man with a trust fund who decides to resurrect the career of a 40-plus-year-old singer.
The idea was actually, it was kind of a spontaneous idea. It actually started as my thesis project in my master's program. And I was in one of my final workshops, and the professor said, come in next week with the first 10 pages of your novel. And everybody just kind of said, what? Because nobody had really started anything. And that was the week, and it was in 2007 when all of these young starlets were kind of going crazy. Lindsay Lohan, Britney Spears, and all of that. And it sparked an idea in me. I said, well, what if I do a story about a woman who's a little older and has had these kind of problems in the past, and now she has a chance at a comeback, and is she going to be able to stay on the straight and narrow and get her career back on track, or is she going to go back into bad behavior? And it kind of, I got good feedback on the first 10 pages, and I decided to just continue it over the next 2 years, writing and rewriting the novel to where it is today. As a full book. So,
well, I have to say it was great. In fact, I was on the plane. I read it on a plane, and I was supposed to go right to work after I got off the plane, and I like sneaked in the bathroom, and I was trying to finish it up, and I had like 20 pages to go.
Right.
But I think people were getting worried about me, but I just I couldn't put it down. It was so good, and I wanted to see, you know, of course the plane lands and comes in right at like the crucial gay pride parade scene, and I'm like, I can't work all day and wonder what happened here. So I had to go in and finish it. But I wanted to say your characters were amazing. You captured the essence of these people. And I wanted to know how much of the, you know, because one of the fun parts of the book is all the little odd ins and outs of the music business.
Yes.
And, you know, in the gay bar scene in New York. And I just wanted to know how much of that was based on your own experience as a singer-songwriter and how much of that is just kind of some research you did along with good old imagination.
Well, I would say that the business part of it, where Greg is making the business plan and all of that, that is pretty much based on true experiences I've had. And also, I don't know if you remember the scene in the music studio where he feels like he's just writing checks for people all the time and it's costing
right.
so much money. That is definitely true, pretty much. And even a couple of those minor characters are thinly disguised.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the rest of it, like the Greg and Sally themselves, Sally's journey is not my journey. Probably I can be thankful for that. But and her brand of music is not my brand of music. And they, you know, they are pretty much just out of pure imagination. Although in a recent reading, somebody asked me if I was part of those characters, and I had to think about it for a minute, and I said, well, I really am kind of half Greg and half Sally. I have her jadedness about the music business, and I have his young, gung-ho attitude about wanting to always start a new project, although I'm much older than Greg is now, or Greg is in the book, but I have his kind of attitude, in fact, about doing the book. I have that same kind of like, well, let's go into novel writing now, you know?
Well, I thought, you know, one of the best parts of the book was the fact that, you know, Sally had been an idol of Greg's, and so a lot of what he was initially dealing with, along with an experience in the music business, was, I guess, just good old-fashioned, you know, being starstruck.
Yeah.
And, you know, you captured that very well because, you know, even toward the end where he had to make some changes and some decisions, you know, it wasn't, you know, like the Donald Trump, you're fired thing. It was still very personal to him. And, you know, how much of that do you see in the music business, and how do you almost feel about that? You know, because I can imagine you probably feel the same way about your novel. You know, this is your project. This is your baby. How could you, you know, move on from it?
That's a great question. And I think it was important for me with the novel to have Greg as a character who became personally involved with Sally, so that there would be that emotional connection, not only to the work but to her, which made it hard for him to. I don't want to give away the plot, but you know, toward the end when things are having to be resolved, I definitely relate to that on both the levels of Greg and Sally. This idea that you create something and you have to you get very emotionally attached to it and want to be artistically true to yourself in some way, and the business doesn't always cooperate that way.
I thought one of the best parts about the book was the realization that basically both characters come to, you know, that old saying of, you know, watch out what you wish for, you just might get it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it almost seems like when things start going very, very well for them, on one hand, as far as their careers and their business, it's almost when other things start falling apart on the other end. And, you know, how do you handle that in real life? You know, you've been a successful singer-songwriter. I can tell you right now, this book is going places.
From your mouth to God's ears.
And what lessons do you think you've learned that you're going to be able to take with you when the book, you know, hits the big time here?
Well, I hope that's the case, because as JD can probably tell you, or you know, I did have a bit of a career as a singer-songwriter. I wouldn't say that I was successful on the level, of course, of where, you know, I was making a lot of money and all of that. It was always a struggle, and there's definitely a part of me in Sally there, and just the part of the business that's a struggle. The lessons, I mean, I really wanted to get across in the novel, and the reason I chose the music business in the novel is because I do know that business pretty inside and out, and I'm just always surprised with all these talent shows on television and everything that people are so enamored of the music business. Everybody wants to be a singer. Everybody wants to be a musician. And part of what I wanted to say in this novel was, yeah, be careful what you wish for. This is not a glamorous career. It's very relentless, hard work to maintain a music career, even I think for the most successful people, it doesn't really stop. You're only as good as your last CD or your last concert, and we love these stories of these older divas making comebacks, because sure enough, they always fall upon hard times. At sometimes, even the successful ones, they rarely have a successful 20, 30, 40 year career without big bumps in the road along the way.
We're talking to Kevin Scott Hall. He is a singer-songwriter who has just completed his first novel, Off the Charts, which is an amazing book. If you haven't gotten your copy, run and get it. And Kevin, the other thing I wanted to ask you is, there's a rumor that people want to see this made into a movie. So is that just kind of something that's being tossed around, or do you think that might be your next step?
I definitely think that is going to be, I hope that's my next step, because yes, that is the response that I get from people who've read the book. They say, you know, the dialogue is great, the characters, we love the characters, this would make a great movie. That is the comment I'm getting more than anybody else. I don't really have too many Hollywood connections, but definitely that's my project the next couple of months, is to write a treatment for the book and try to get an agent or somebody to get it to the right people in the film world, because I even as I was writing it, I thought to myself, you know, I think this would make a good movie. So I definitely want to pursue that.
So I do have to ask you, you have had a career as a singer-songwriter. I assume you still have a career as a singer-songwriter. So the whole thing about the underwear coming off, is that something you had done to get your career off the ground? Or?
No, absolutely not.
Well, you did say that was kind of based on you, so I thought I should ask.
I hope that people get the satire of that, because part of my point with all of that is that I think the music business, especially pop music business for women, is getting a little ridiculous. And I was actually sitting in a bar with a friend of mine at some point when this was all being written, and we watched the music videos come up, you know, and it was one female singer after another, and they all were being just, I can't imagine that they all made this decision on their own, but you've probably noticed that it's very sexualized for the female singers. They're making them all look like prostitutes or something, and I just think it's a shame. You know, someone like Christina Aguilera is a great singer, and she's rolling around in the dirt, you know, in a string bikini, and rubbing up against the backup dancers. And I thought, why does she need to do this? Why is the music industry getting to this point where we have to push our beautiful young women singers into being sex objects? So that was kind of a satirical point that I wanted to make in the novel, and I had to push Sally a little further to make that point.
Joan, 2 minutes.
Okay. Well, Kevin, thank you so much for being with us tonight. The novel is called Off the Charts, and if you could just give our listeners an idea of how they can get their very own copy.
Yeah, the book has just been out for a month or two. Right now it's available on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, or if you go to a Barnes & Noble and ask for it, they will order it for you, or at iUniverse.com, the publisher. But get out there to Amazon and Barnes & Noble and order it, and then hopefully we'll get it on the shelves in the next couple of months.
Great. Well, we've been talking to Kevin Scott Hall. His novel is Off the Charts, and believe me, it is very much off the charts. I highly recommend this novel. It is absolutely wonderful. And Kevin, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you so much, Joan. It was a great pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. You're listening to 90.1 FM Houston, KPFT, Queer Voices.
We'll check out the buzz about the latest right-wing closet case, but first, a European vacation with a handsome young man would have been music to the ears of this mystery man in a Rainbow Minute.
It's time for Who Said That? On this episode of the Rainbow Minute. Calling himself Walter Buster Keys at age 14, this man started playing honky-tonk piano in cocktail lounges. Born in Wisconsin in 1919, his schmaltzy, over-the-top persona was showcased in his own 1950s TV show. His trademark was lavishly sequined and rhinestone-studded costumes with loads of gold lame. Always performing at a grand piano with a candelabra, his hands displayed huge rings. When asked how he played the piano wearing all those rings, he said, quote, "Very well, thank you." He also got big laughs with this comment, quote, "If I went on stage in a business suit, they would think I was crazy. It's like Marlene Dietrich in a house dress." Who said that? It was the pianist always known by his last name, Liberace. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
Mainstream media tongues seem to mostly wag the dog when the right people get caught with the wrong people, but is there a productive reason for focusing attention on yet another religious right rabble-rouser sex scandal?
Hypocrisy's at an all-time high. Kiss the boys and then deny it. When they find out what you've done, which direction will you run? Religious leaders in high places, politicians with well-known faces, caught in the act and falling from graces. These are hard times for closet cases. Better that they've been exposed, but that don't make a weed rose. What does it do to our esteem to have these liars on our team? Religious leaders in high places, politicians with well-known faces, engaging in compromising embraces. These are hard times for closet cases.
Dr. George Reekers has been pretty much inescapable this week. As MSNBC's Rachel Maddow will point out shortly, the truly salacious elements of the case involving one of America's leading proponents of the queer cure are readily available online, and this is, after all, a family show. Among the numerous television reports was this one on CNN's Anderson Cooper 360.
Tonight, a leading opponent of gay marriage, of gays and lesbians adopting kids, and equal rights for gay people in general, is now entangled in a sex scandal. George Reekers helped found the socially conservative Family Research Council. He's accused of hiring a male escort who advertises on an explicit website and also of taking him on a sexually charged European vacation. For the record, Reekers denies the sexual part. The allegations were first reported in Miami's New Times, a local alternative newspaper. Tonight, Randy Kaye talks to the young man who was hired by Mr. Reekers. Tonight, he's speaking for the first time on camera.
He calls himself Lucian. He's a paid male escort who says he only advertises his services on the website rentboy.com, where visitors can select among hundreds of male escorts who advertise in suggestive and revealing poses. That website is where Lucian says he was first contacted by George Reekers, a professor and Baptist minister who has weighed in on almost every piece of anti-gay legislation around the country. What's not in dispute is that Reekers and Lucian just returned from a two-week European vacation, and that Lucian was hired to help with the bags. But Lucian also says for the trip to Madrid and London, he was to give Reekers what Lucian called sexual massages every day.
He basically got excited. That was the whole case.
So he wanted you to touch him?
Well, yeah.
Did you have sex with him on the trip?
No.
Did he ask to?
Not at all.
Lucian showed me the contract he signed with Reekers. For $75 a day, it says he must carry the bags, provide a massage for at least 1 hour every day of the trip in their shared room, plus spend at least 8 hours a day with him, including two meals. On Raker's website, a very different account of how he met Lucien, by interviewing different people who might be able to help, and did not even find out about his travel assistant's internet advertisements offering prostitution activity until after the trip was in progress. There was nothing inappropriate with this relationship, and he emphasized he was not involved in any illegal or sexual behavior with his travel assistant. Rakers is a board member for NARTH, the National Association for Research and Therapy of Homosexuality, a group that says it helps people with, quote, unwanted homosexual attractions. He's also the co-founder of the Family Research Council, which promotes the traditional family unit. And in 2008, here in Florida, George Raker served as an expert witness in a case to uphold the law banning gays and lesbians from adopting. In his writings, he called gays a, quote, deviant segment of society. The state of Florida paid him about $120,000 for his testimony. Wayne Besson is with Truth Wins Out, a group that exposes what it sees as hypocrisy in the anti-gay movement.
He has helped create anti-gay attitudes and justify discrimination across the country. It seems Rackers doesn't think gay people should raise boys. They think he should rent boys. So I think he's quite the hypocrite there.
Lucien says Rackers knew he was gay before the trip because he had told him about his boyfriends.
Does he still deny to you that he's gay?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I actually asked him over the phone, you know, do you think you're gay? And he just said no.
Lucien told me Rakers had asked him not to share his story with the media.
He just didn't want me to mention the massage aspect, you know. That's what it really was.
And he asked you not to?
Yeah, he had asked me not to.
In response to the publicity, NARTH, where Rakers is a board member, released this statement saying it takes seriously the accusations that have been made. In response to an email from CNN, Rakers wrote, I am retaining the services of a defamation attorney in this matter because the fact is, I am not gay and never have been. Lucien, meanwhile, says he feels sorry for Rakers. He enjoyed their European vacation together and would like to be his friend. He wants him to stop making anti-gay statements. Randy Kay, CNN, Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
One final note, the Family Research Council, which George Rakers helped found, released a statement today distancing themselves from him. In fact, they say they had to check their historical records to verify that he was, in fact, a member of the original board. And they went on to say, in part, FRC has had no contact with Dr. Rakers or knowledge of his activities in over a decade. So FRC can provide no further insight into these allegations. And they added, while we are extremely disappointed when any Christian leader engages in the very activities that they preach against, it is not surprising. The scriptures clearly teach the fallen nature of all people. We each have a choice to act upon that nature or accept the forgiveness offered by the grace through faith in Jesus Christ.
MSNBC commentator Rachel Maddow viewed the Rieker story as being about more than one hypocrite's fall from grace.
Meet George Allen Rakers, a conservative Baptist minister, co-founder of the vehemently anti-gay group, the Family Research Council, and one of the nation's loudest proponents of the idea that homosexuality can be cured. Here's George Rakers, photographed by the Miami New Times at Miami's airport, returning from a 10-day European vacation with a much younger, quite hunky companion, who he met and hired through the website rentboy.com. Rentboy, in case you're unfamiliar with the term, is not like, you know, man with a van will help with moving or get tickets to rent the Broadway show. It's rentboy, as in when you log on, you have to click through to acknowledge you're okay with sexually explicit material, and then you essentially agree to pay for hunky male companionship. When the story broke in the Miami New Times, Mr. Rakers told the paper that he had hired this young man in question because, quote, I had surgery and I can't lift luggage, which doesn't explain why in this New Times photo, as you can see, it is Mr. Rakers who is the one wrangling the cart, not his young consort. Mr. Rakers also told the paper that he used the trip to explain that the Christian faith is based in love and to show the rent boy how he too could be saved. Later, the young man who Mr. Rakers brought to Europe told the paper that he had spent part of each day on that trip giving Mr. Rakers massages. Very, very specific massages. You can look up the descriptions of them online yourself. There's no need to get into that here. I realize this story has been everywhere this week. There are a lot of things that are funny about it, and it is easy to have schadenfreude about a guy this ostentatiously hypocritical. I would like to add something, though, to our understanding of what's going on here after a week of coverage of this story. People being gay, people being closeted, people hiring sex workers, in themselves, those things are neither all that funny nor all that newsworthy. But when people have built their careers, their professions, on professions of their own sexual moral rectitude, David Vitter, John Ensign, when people have built their careers on trying to make life miserable and dangerous for gay people while they themselves are secretly gay, Larry Craig, George Reekers, then congratulations, you've made the news. It's no longer just your private business. What hasn't been appreciated about the George Reekers rent boy case is just how miserable he has tried to make life for other gay people in this country, and the fact that he's still doing it. So here's George Reekers getting caught at the Miami airport on April 13th, okay? That's him in the blue shirt in the foreground. It's a picture he didn't want you to see. The George Reekers he does want you to see shows up here exactly 2 weeks earlier in this letter, dated March 31st. This letter was reportedly sent to every school superintendent in America, all 14,800 of them. The letter advises school districts, quote, in dealing with adolescents experiencing same-sex attraction, it's essential to understand there is no scientific evidence that an individual is born gay or transgender. It is also critical to understand that these conditions can respond well to therapy. Right? If you have the gay, don't worry. It can be cured. Although doing so sometimes leaves a lingering backache? Maybe? The Hey Superintendent, any gay kids in your school district need to be told they can be cured letter is from none other than George Reekers. See, he's listed here on the letter as a member of the Pediatric Psychosocial Development Committee of this group, the American College of Pediatricians. That sounds official. It sounds serious, right? It's not. They are just one of these wacky far-right cure the gays groups. They're hoping that you will mistake them. They are the American College of Pediatricians. They're hoping you'll mistake them for the real doctors group, the American Academy of Pediatrics. That's the real group. Again, the Cure the Gays letter from George Reekers' group goes out on March 31st to every school district in the country. George Reekers then shows up at Miami's airport 2 weeks later with the hot young guy he hired off of rentboy.com, having just returned from a 10-day rentboy vacation. It's as though he and his colleagues put the letter in the mail, deadline met, and then left for 2 weeks of much-needed vacation and massages. The reason George Reeker's pitiful, closeted, hypocritical life news is actual news is because he's quite actively engaged in trying to change this country to make it a more difficult place to be gay, particularly a more difficult place to be a young gay person, while he is simultaneously hiring at least one young gay person to not carry his baggage. In 2004, George Reekers was paid tens of thousands of dollars to testify as an expert witness for the state of Arkansas, supporting that state's ban on gay parents caring for foster kids. In 2008, George Reekers was again paid tens of thousands of taxpayer dollars to be an anti-gay expert witness, this time by the state of Florida, to defend Florida's ban on gay parents adopting. A court ruling on the constitutionality of that law is expected any day now. Here's the basic idea about cases like this. And Larry Craig, and Ted Haggard, and John Ensign, and David Vitter, and. The miserable denial and lying in your own sex lives is your own miserable, in-denial, lying business. Unless you make it the whole country's business by crusading against the thing that is true about yourself that you hate so much. Being gay cannot be cured. Being a contemptible, pathetic hypocrite can be cured. Come out wherever you are.
What's the disease? What is the cure? No one agrees, no one is sure. Time will tell them, who will decide? Will they be welcome on either side? Don't care about their private lives, their lovers.
Podcasts of Anderson Cooper 360 are available at CNN.com, and The Rachel Maddow Show is at MSNBC.com. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Rick Watts, Jen Mahoney, and Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Dustin Richardson contributed program material. Thanks also to J.D. Doyle. Ron Romanofsky sang Hard Times for Closet Cases, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is supported by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and by our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, listen to our podcasts, read the texts of this week's news wrap, or subscribe to CDs of our programs. Check out our fan page at facebook.com/thiswayoutradio. To receive our weekly content email alert, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KMUD, Garberville, California, 6RTR, Perth, West Australia, WHYS, Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Well, before we go, we still have a few minutes left here. We first want to thank Wayne from our Sharon, who is not inside the loop, but we appreciate all of our listeners. Well, all of our listeners listening, whether you're listening in Houston, whether you're listening in the metropolitan area, whether you're listening online, because, you know, we used to get J.D.'s brother from Ohio used to pledge to us every so often. We really appreciate everybody who's helping support KPFT and Queer Voices. We still have some time. We'll be back here the next 2 weeks during the fundraising. It is important that you take part and become part, become an active member, and say that you're part of our family, part of the KPFT family of people who really support the voices that we have, the queer voices. And tonight we had a discussion on a couple of different areas talking about inclusion. And that's something that we really strive for here on Queer Voices, and to be open to the community and hopefully make this a better place for all of us.
Well, and two, this is Queer Voices. We're one of the very few programs that are exclusively about the GLBT community, and you won't find that kind of programming on any other station like we have here. And it's here for you. You, the community, you support us by you pledging during this time and saying you've listened to Queer Voices. It's a vote for our program and to continue the good work we do. We spend a lot of time putting together these programs, and we do it as a volunteers just for you. So in turn, take a few moments and call us at 713-526-5738 and give us your pledge now. It's important to keep our program viable and the station, as well as all of KPFT.
Tell us what we got coming up next week.
Next week in our first hour, we've got Stephen Kleinberg, and we're going to talk about the statistics and data and the demographics of the city and our metropolitan area. They do this study every few years, and the comment he made to me was that we have some remarkable statistics that will be very important to the GLBT community. That's in the first hour next week. In the second hour, we're going to have a conversation about the HRC Gala coming up on the 16th of May. So, not the 16th of May. It's after that. It's the 26th.
Okay. It's sometime in the future.
Yes, yes. I'm sorry. I don't have it written down in front of me, but it's the HRC Gala. And these are some of the other organizations that we support here. And this is what Queer Voices is about, giving you the information that you need to live your life better here in Houston.
So you still have a chance to call us, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. You can make that pledge now. You can make that pledge for somebody who may not be able to make that pledge, who may not have the money or may still be rather young and not being able to make that pledge for him or herself. So we're asking you to do that. Do that so that we can continue here on KPFT, Pacifica Radio, and Queer Voices.
I want to thank Kristen Williams and Daniel Williams in our first segment, in our discussion about the GLBT community and the trans community as their segregating of one another and how to solve that problem. Also, I want to thank Paul Guillory and Megan Stabler in our discussion with a human rights organization as well as the TMG One Voice and the dialogue and report of a meeting that we had back on the 6th, on April 17th. Also want to thank Kevin Scott Hall and our interview with Joan Devlin and This Way Out and News Wrap.
Thanks for listening and please pledge to KPFT.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Falinski. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack at queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
You can't spend all your time in Iraq to follow what's going on, so you can count on KPFT to do it for you. You can't spend your days following the new agenda in Congress or its dealings with the White House, so you can count on KPFT to do that too. You can't spend your days listening to all the new music to find the best artists and songs. You can count on KPFT. Your support keeps KPFT on the air and gives you news, information, and music you don't hear anywhere else. That's why we're asking for your financial support today. Please make your gift to KPFT.org or call 713-526-5738. That's 713.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.